This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Nicholas Scopetto, was appointed last year by New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani to reform the city's foster care system. Scopetto is a product of that system. He and his two older brothers were placed in foster care in 1937 and spent 6 years in various institutions. Scopetto is a former prosecutor who became known for his investigation into police corruption when he worked with the Knapp Commission. He's also a former deputy mayor. He's up against a lot now. The foster care system is overcrowded and can't always provide beds for newcomers. And several caseworkers have recently been accused of failing to properly investigate and monitor abuse. I asked Foster about the circumstances that led him to be placed in foster care in 1937 when he was 5 years old.
Yes, well, my mother and father separated. My mother forcibly, that is, she went to jail. And we were left with my father, and my brothers and I were home alone. I was of kindergarten age, they were of school age. Eventually, school authorities sent investigators, and an agency that was called the New York Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children had peace officers. They investigated. They eventually placed us in. We went through several institutions before we ended up at a place called Woody Crest, and that turned out to be a very positive experience. Our years at Woody Crest.
Why was your mother sent to jail?
Well, I've since seen the reports. The investigative reports, she forged a check for $18, a neighbor's check that she had somehow come into possession of, cashed that check. Actually, she got $18 in cash and $3.20 in groceries. So that's why she went to jail.
When you think back, do you think the punishment for the crime, the punishment including that you and your two brothers spent 6 years in foster care?
Well, it seems to me like a pretty severe sentence. She went to jail for 3 months. Who knows what that proceeding was all about? That is, today, of course, every defendant's represented by a lawyer, and there's a whole panoply of due process protections. Not so in the 30s. People went through the system very quickly. I don't think I think the punishment was excessive, and the dramatic impact on the family was beyond anything that conduct deserved. You would think that a judge would take into account that there were young children who would be uncared for, would be unattended. Obviously, it didn't make any difference to him.
When the caseworkers came and took you away from your father, did you feel, how did you feel about that?
Well, you know, at five, that's a long time ago. I'm not sure I could recapture all of that, but I remember the night before we left. Something that my brothers and I have talked about. And my older brother, who was 11, tried to have a kind of going away party, if you can call it that. He took us to the nearby 5 and 10. I remember that evening, afternoon, vividly, as he took us through the 5 and 10. We couldn't buy anything. We had no money to buy anything, but it was a treat just to be there and look at toys and look at things. That was his way of trying to, I suppose, be the good father to us before we left.
Just curious, do you think your mother had a pattern of breaking the law, or was she desperate for food?
Oh, I have no reason to believe she had a pattern of breaking the law. I saw something in the file that showed that they had a weekly income of $15 a week that supported all of us. And that was a combination of what my father could earn at the docks, shaping up for work on a daily basis, working as a superintendent for the building. I'm sure $18 seemed like a great deal of money to her.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Nicholas Scopetta, and he now runs New York City's foster care system. He directs the city's Administration for Children's Services. You were in several homes before ending up in the home that you stayed in for 5 years?
Yeah, the first place we went to was called the Children's Shelter. It's interesting, I was just back there 2 weeks ago and didn't quite realize where I was until I walked into the building and I remembered that was the place I had first gone to. I was there with the mayor. He has cabinet meetings around the city. And that was a setting for a cabinet meeting because it's now El Museo de Baidio, the museum for Spanish-speaking cultures.
Did it bring back memories?
Well, I spoke to the director, who then arranged to give me a tour. I remembered the rooftop because that's where we used to play, and I remembered the auditorium. Though it seemed a lot smaller to me last week than it did when I was a child. But that was about what I remembered. That was a tough place in that it was very crowded. Their older children were mixed with the younger children. And my brother Tony and I were together. We were separated from my older brother. And I remember that it was so crowded that cots were set up in the hallways at night, and Tony and I slept in the same bed with our heads at opposite ends of the bed. And then the cots were taken down the next day, folded up, and put away. There was a school of sorts in the building, but I don't remember much happening at that school. We were all crowded together. My brother and I shared a seat, as a matter of fact, and there were older children in the classroom, so it was mostly a kind of custodial arrangement. Nobody seemed to be doing any serious teaching there. And that, I'm not sure how long we were there, but I think we were there at least a couple of months.
And from there?
Well, then I passed through a couple of places. I remember being in a home that must have been run by a Catholic organization. The Royal Nuns were the caretakers. Despite the fact that my background is Italian, I'm Protestant, and somebody must have learned that and moved me after a couple of nights to a place called the Gould Foundation. There is still a Gould organization. I don't know if they still run this same kind of facility, but this was in a country setting, and I think it was someplace in the northern Bronx or southern Westchester. A couple of interesting things happened there in that I didn't know my brothers were there also. I guess I was 5 or 6. And the next time I saw my brother Tony, I didn't recognize him. He had grown so much. And I ran into him at a visit to the dentist there at that institution. And he recognized me and told me who he was told me that my brother Vince was there too. And we talked to a supervisor, I remember, and she assured me that we would all be, could get together. That never happened. And the next time I saw either one of them was sometime after when we were moved to Woody Crest, which is the place we lived at for most of our time away.
You've spoken very highly of Woody Crest, the place that you lived at for, I guess, the better part of 5 years.
Yes.
When you were in foster care. What is it about that place that you thought functioned well and was a good force in your life?
A couple of things. One, I was together with my brothers. I think that that was enormously important to me. Two, the people cared about us. There was always a sense that they were there for you. I know that there were punishments for various infractions, but I never suffered any of those. In time, I was made to feel that I was smart and competent and that there was some potential there. I was always getting a lot of support. We went to an excellent school nearby. It was in a section of the Bronx then that was very upper middle class. The school reflected the kind of attention and concern the public school system gives better neighborhoods. And the teachers were very involved with us. There were some ups and downs, but I think overall it was a very positive experience. We also went to a summer camp that was part of Woody Crest for the entire summer. The day school was out. To the time that school began, we were at a place located in Oceanport, New Jersey, that was really a wonderful experience. It was a camp with baseball fields and tennis courts, and we went to the beach every other day, bus trips, so that it was about, I suppose, as good as institutional living can be for kids.
You were in a group home. Did you ever wish that you were getting adopted by foster parents and living in a home with a family?
Never thought in terms of adoption. My mother was back on the scene. She visited us on a regular basis. And the assumption was one day we would go home, not that we would be adopted. And despite the fact that we thought of Woody Crest as a terrific place, I think we mostly thought of it as a terrific place after we were out of Woody Crest, because while we were there, we're always looking forward to going home. That was sort of the goal.
Why did it take so long for you to be sent back home? 6 years. Your mother was in jail for 3 months.
Yes, that's a little bit of a... that's not quite clear, but I think what happened is that, given the economics of the times, that it was more convenient, more practical, an arrangement that suited her, that we stayed there.
My guest is Nicholas Scapetta. He heads New York City's foster care system. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Nicholas Scapetta. He heads New York City's foster care system. He spent 6 years in foster care as a child. Did growing up in foster care feel like something to you you needed to cover up? Were you embarrassed about it before you got into this professionally and before it became a real asset because you understood so much about it?
Well, I suppose I always did feel it was something to be kept hidden. And I'm not sure I even today fully understand that dynamic. It made me feel different. It was a kind of family secret. None of us really talked much about it. And it was a long time, certainly, before I talked about it publicly. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I think it's extremely helpful. I think it's a good thing to talk about with our kids in foster care. I want them to see that while they're different, the difference doesn't necessarily mean that they can't have a full and complete life and become a professional, do some of the things that I've done. And I think it's a very useful thing to do. I think it gives me some credibility with them as well, and I think that's important because, you know, most of my kids, our kids in the system, come from very different backgrounds, cultural backgrounds, and I think it helps bridge that difference when they know that I've been in foster care myself.
Is the foster care system a very different system now than it was when you were in it?
Well, yes, it is, and it's different in many ways. Most obviously, in terms of the volume of kids in care now as compared to when I was in foster care.
There's more of them now?
Oh, many, many more. We have over 42,000 children in our care now, and I don't have the numbers from back in the 30s and 40s, but it surely numbered in the hundreds. We have a much more elaborate system, a very comprehensive system. Our agency, for example, has jurisdiction over children in foster care, investigations of abuse and neglect. Also, we run Head Start in New York and the daycare system and the Office of Child Support Enforcement, an agency that goes after deadbeat dads and moms who have not lived up to their financial obligations to children.
Do you think the reasons that children end up in foster care have changed since the 30s when you were a foster child?
Very much so. Today we have a large population of children, as much as 75% of our kids, come from backgrounds where the parents have some abuse problem, drugs or some substance abuse problem. So drugs and alcohol primarily. And that was really not a factor back in the 30s and 40s. In my own case, we were children of the Depression years. There were a lot of kids who needed someone to take care of them, give them a roof over their heads, and then feed them. So it was directly related to the fact that times were tough, economic times were tough. Here it is very much, I think, a increase in the use of drugs that has made the system so complicated today.
When you took over New York City's foster care system, did you say to yourself that there was any one or two things from your own experiences that you wanted to bring back into the system?
Well, I think there's a need to personalize the system in some way. That is, we are moving towards neighborhood-based system of delivery of services, neighborhood-based foster care. I think that is an important change in approach that's worked well in other jurisdictions, Los Angeles, Cleveland, some of the places I visited. That is where we want to end up. That's an enormous undertaking because we don't do that now in New York. Kids get removed, say, from Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn and get moved up to the North Bronx with a foster care family. That makes it very difficult for our families who are already fairly dysfunctional to begin with, or their children wouldn't be in foster care. It makes it difficult for them to stay in touch with their children. We know from the little bit of statistical analysis we've been able to do on this manual system. By the way, we're moving to a computerized system, and we are halfway there. In this manual system, our analysis shows that about 80% of our children return to families or relatives. Now, that's an important consideration in setting policy for the agency. If the kids are going to go back, at least 80% of them are going to go back, we should be trying to make every effort to keep and develop and improve on the relationship between the birth parents and the children.
What would you most like to see children in foster care have that you had when you were a child?
Well, the most important influence, I think, is stabilizing influence is some adult in their lives. So that if it can be a foster family, that of course is the best thing I think that can happen, because that's a family for life. For a lot of our kids, I think it means any adult. And what that means to me is having mentoring programs, and that's something that we're developing. We have independent living training for children when they reach about 14 and they're in our care. And those are kids who are going to leave the system at 18 when they age out of the system. That's pretty young to be out on your own. And so that if we can introduce adults into their lives so that they have mentors, so that they have some support out there, I think we'll be doing something very significant.
It seems to me from your own past that you must have had a pretty ambivalent set of feelings about foster care. On the one hand, you had a really good experience in it. On the other hand, you probably felt like you didn't belong in foster care in the first place.
Well, perhaps. I don't think I ever, and to this day, I don't fully understand all that goes on inside of me when I consider issues like that. For me, I was happy that I was having a positive school experience. That turned out to be very important for me. I think what it also did for me, I think it can do this for our kids now, kind of developed a maybe some survival mechanisms, that Somehow I knew that there was something, some inner core that I could rely on, maybe had to rely on. I think that's important for kids to feel that. Maybe you can translate that into a sense of self-esteem. It turned out to be an inner strength. I think kids can develop that too, but they need a lot of help from all of us.
Nicholas Capetta is the commissioner of the Administration for Children's Services in New York. He'll be back with us in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Nicholas Capetta. He heads New York City's foster care system. He's a product of that system. He was placed in foster care in 1937 and spent 6 years in the system before he was returned to his mother. Scapetta says that adoptions in New York City through the foster care system are up 78% since fiscal year 94. He told me about the strategy behind the increase and the problem that needed fixing.
Well, it was largely a management problem. What we did was create a sense of urgency in all the agencies that do adoption work and in our own staff. We coordinated all of this with the family court. And then we did some things with the procedures that exist. We have been streamlining the procedures to a certain extent so that we have concurrent planning. And by that, I simply mean that when a child comes into care and looks as though this is a case that conceivably could end up in an adoption, we begin doing that planning immediately because there are a lot of things that have to happen. Fingerprint records, home visits, home investigations, background checks, notification to family that may have expressed no interest in the child but must legally be part of the proceeding before you can terminate parental rights. All of that has to happen in the family court, and that's what takes a good deal of time. And we've also instituted a change that the day the termination of parental rights is ordered by a court is the day we file the adoption petitions so that it keeps it before the same judge. That didn't used to be the case. So I've viewed it as more a management problem, and we created a special unit, the Adoption Expediting Unit, whose focus is on streamlining the process.
Let's talk about race a little bit. I believe 90% of the kids in New York City foster care are minorities. And I wonder how that affects their chances of adoption. I know there was a time, I don't know if this is still true, when African-American children were less likely to be adopted than white children.
Well, there is no restriction in that regard. That is, a Caucasian family can adopt an African-American child and vice versa. Those restrictions don't exist in law, but of course they do exist in reality and in practice. That is, that people, I think, are looking for children of their own cultural background, though not always the case. So it is true that most of our children are African-American or Latino, that the children we have in our care. We have about 18,000 children whose final goal is adoption of the 42,000 children in our care. There's no question that that is the population that we have our outreach programs for. I mean, for example, we have a program modeled after the One Church, One Child program that was developed in Chicago some many years ago. That means one church provide one set of adoptive parents a year. Well, we have over 4,000 churches, and we really should expand that. The alliteration works when we say one church, one child. What we really mean is one house of worship, one child. If we can get the entire religious community involved in this effort, we will increase the number of children we began that can get adopted. We began this outreach in the African American churches, and we're moving to the Latino churches because that is where the greatest need is. And we have had now several meetings with ministers from the African American community to try to get them on board. The response has been just wonderful. Virtually 100% of every minister we've talked to. And when this gets underway, I think we're going to have an enormous resource for additional adoptions.
As the head of the Administration for Children's Services in New York City, a good deal of your job is taming this huge bureaucracy and making it run in a more efficient way. How often do you actually get into the field and visit children's homes and spend time with the children and see what the system is really like?
Sure, I try to do as much of that as possible. During my first year, I visited every one of our field offices, and I have been visiting daycare centers, Head Start programs as well. Quite frankly, I find that an invigorating experience, a kind of reviving experience. To sit in a Head Start class with 14 or 15 youngsters and read to them and talk to them and get that kind of feedback is really therapy for me. It reminds us of what we're there for, but it is the most pleasant kind of experience that I can have in the agency.
Were you ever tempted to become a foster parent yourself?
Oh, well, you may have read some reports about young Jonathan Adams. Was a little five-year-old, was abandoned by his mother in a toy store. And I got involved with that case in a very direct way because we could not locate Jonathan's parents. And it turned out they were from out of state. They were from the South. His mother was. Eventually, what we did after several months of not able to locate or identify Jonathan's history, we went on television with Jonathan after we got a court order authorizing that. In short order, we quickly identified Jonathan's family. But in the process, I got to know Jonathan pretty well. He's a beautiful little boy. There's a kind of elegance about him. And a dignity about him that he's acquired. It is the same age that I went into foster care at, and there was a lot of identification there. It's not appropriate, I suppose, for the head of the agency to pick out a child and say, I'll take this one. And as a matter of fact, there is a family court proceeding that Jonathan is at the center of, where his aunt would like to get custody of him. That investigation is going on, that matter is before the court, and it'll get resolved one way or the other. I suppose if I was tempted, Jonathan would have been the temptation.
Nicholas Scopetta, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Nicholas Scopetta is the commissioner of the Administration for Children's Services in New York.